Chapter 45. Tom Orley. A chilly sea breeze swept over him out of the west. A bout of shivering shook him awake in the middle of the night, his eyes opened in the dark, staring into emptiness. He couldn't remember where he was. "Give it a moment," he thought. "It'll come." He had been dreaming of the planet Garth, where the seas were small and the rivers many. There he had lived for a time among the human and chimp colonists, a mixed colony as rich and surprising as Calafia, where man and dolphin dwelt together. Garth was a friendly world, though isolated far from other Earthling settlements. In his dream, Garth was invaded. Giant warships hovered over her cities and spewed clouds of gas across her fertile valleys, sending colonists fleeing in panic. The sky had been filled with flashing lights. He had trouble separating the trailing edges of the dream from reality. Tom stared at the crystal dome of Kithrup's night. His body was locked, legs pulled in, hands clutching opposite shoulders, as much from a rigor of exhaustion as from the cold. Slowly he got the muscles to loosen. Tendons popped and joints groaned as he learned all over again how to move. The volcano to the north had died down to only a feeble red glow. There were long, ragged openings in the clouds overhead. Tom watched the pinpoints of light in the sky. He thought about stars. Astronomy was his mental focus. "Red means cool," he thought. "That red one there might be a small, nearby, ancient, or a distant giant already in its death throes. And that bright one over there could be a blue supergiant, very rare. Was there one in this area of space?" He ought to remember. Tom blinked. The blue star was moving. He watched it drift across the starfield until it intercepted another bright pinpoint, this one a brilliant green. There was a flash as the two tiny lights met. When the blue spark moved on, the green was gone. Now what were the chances I'd witness that? How likely was it that I'd be looking at just the right place at the right time? The battle must still be pretty hot and heavy up there. It isn't over yet. Tom tried to rise, but his body sagged back against the bed of vines. "Okay, try again." He rolled over onto one elbow, paused to marshal his strength, then pushed upright. Kithrup's small, dim moons were absent, but there was enough starlight to make out the eerie weedscape. Water sluiced through the shifting morass. There were croaking and slithering sounds. Once he heard a tiny scream that choked off, some small prey suddenly dying, he supposed. He was thankful for the obstinacy that had brought him to this modest height. Even 2 meters made a difference. He couldn't have survived a night down in that loathsome mess. He turned stiffly and began groping through his meager supplies on the crude sledge. First priority was to get warm. He pulled the top piece of his wetsuit from the jumbled pile and gingerly slid into it. Tom knew he should give some attention to his wounds, but they could wait just a little longer. So could a full meal. He had salvaged enough stores for a few of those. Munching on a food bar and taking sparing sips from a canteen, Tom appraised his small pile of equipment. At the moment, what mattered were his 3 psi bombs. He looked up at the sky. Except for a faint purple haze near one bright star, there were no more signs of the battle. Yet that one glimpse had been enough. Tom already knew which bomb to set off. Jillian had spent a few hours with the Nis machine before leaving Streaker to meet him at Toshio's island. she had connected the Timbrimi device to the Thenanin microbranch library he had salvaged. Then she and the NIS had worked out the proper signals to load into the bombs. The most important was the Thenanin distress call. Ifni's fickle luck permitting, it would let Tom perform the crucial experiment to find out if the plan would work. All of the work Soesi and Tisht and the others had put into the Trojan seahorse would come to naught if Thenanin were not amongst those left in the war. What use would it be for Streaker to slip inside a hollowed-out Thenanin hulk to rise into space in disguise if all the combatants would shoot anyway at a remnant of a faction which had already lost? Tom picked up one psi bomb. It was spherical and rested in his hand like an orb. At the top was a safety switch and timer. Jillian had carefully labeled each bomb on a strip of tape. On this one, she had added a flowing signature and a small heart with an arrow through it. Tom smiled and brought the bomb to his lips. He had felt guilty of machismo, insisting on being the one to come here while she remained behind. Now he knew he had been right. Tough and competent as Jillian was, she wasn't as good a pilot as he, and probably would have died in the crash. She certainly wouldn't have had the physical strength to haul the sledge this far. Hell, he thought. I'm glad because she's safe with friends who'll protect her. That's reason enough. She may be able to lick 10 Blenchug cave lizards with one hand tied, but she's my lady, and I'll not let harm come near her if I can help it. Tom washed down the last of the protein bar. He hefted the bomb and considered strategy. His original plan had been to land near the volcano, wait until the glider had recharged for launching, then plant the bomb and take flight before it went off. He could have ridden thermals from the volcano to a good altitude and found another island from which to watch the results of his experiment. Lacking another island, he still could have gone far enough, landed in the ocean, and used his telescope to watch from there. It was a nice plan, foiled by a raging storm and an unexpected jungle of mad vines. His telescope had joined the metal detritus at the bottom of Kithrup's world sea, along with most of the wreckage of his solar plane. Tom rose carefully to his feet. Food and warmth made it merely an exercise in controlled agony. Rummaging through his few belongings, he tore a long, narrow strip of cloth from the tattered ruins of his sleeping bag. The swatch of tough insu silk seemed adequate. The psi bomb felt heavy and substantial in his hand. It was hard to imagine that the globe was stuffed with powerful illusions, a super-potent counterfeit, ready to burst free on command. He set the timer for 2 hours and thumbed the safety release, arming the thing. He laid it carefully into his makeshift sling. Tom knew he was being dramatic. Distance wouldn't help him much. Sensors all over the Kithrup system would light up when it went off. He might as well set it off at his feet. Still, one never knew. He tossed it as far away as he could. He let the sling sway a few times to get the feel of it. Then he began swinging it. Slowly at first, he built up momentum while a strange feeling of well-being spread outward from his chest into his arms and legs. Fatigue seemed to fall away. He started to sing. Oh, Daddy was a caveman. He played ball in skins with shirts. He dreamed of lights up in the sky while scratching in the dirt. You Eties and your stars. Oh, Daddy was a fighter. He killed his cousins fourth and third. He dreamed of peace eternally and died speared to the earth. You Eties and your stars. Oh, Daddy was a lover, and yet he beat his wife. He dreamed, longing for sanity, regretting all his life. you Eaties and your stars. Oh, Daddy was a leader. He dreamed yet still told lies. He got the frightened masses to put missiles in the skies. You Eaties and your stars. Oh, Daddy was unlearned, but ever on he tried. He hated his damned ignorance and struggled with his pride. He stepped up on a bootstrap then, and up on nothing cried. That tragic orphan willed to me a mind and heart, then died. So scorn me as a wolfling, sneer at my orphan scars, but tell me, boys, what's your excuse? You Eaties and your stars, you Eaties and your stars. Tom's shoulders flexed as he took a step. His arm snapped straight, and he released the sling. The bomb sailed high into the night, whirling like a top. The spinning sphere shone briefly, still climbing, sparkling until it disappeared from sight. He listened, but never heard it land. Tom stood for a while, breathing deeply. Well, he thought at last, that built an appetite. I have 2 hours in which to eat, tend my wounds, and prepare a shelter. Any time I get after that, O Lord, will be accepted with humble gratitude. He laid the ragged strip of cloth over his shoulder and turned to prepare himself a meal by starlight.